Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort, the bed that lets you adjust the mattress firmness to your preference, your sleep number.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It's been wet out there. We got a lot of rain. We had storms all this week, the big dramatic sort of Shakespearean storms with big thunder clouds rolling in and thunder and lightning. Very, very dramatic. And then knocked out the power so that people had to cook their dinner Wednesday over on the grill, which gave a kind of a dramatic sort of refugee quality to the whole thing. And then these geese came flying in low, heading north, honking all the way, like people going on their way to a bad party. And it was dramatic out there. The pastor's wife, Pastor Inkvist's wife, got tired of this groundhog who'd been eating her flowers, and she walked out in front of her house in broad daylight, and she shot it dead right there. And she went out and she put it up on a shovel and she threw it as hard as she could out into the woods. People watched this just in slack-jawed amazement. It's that time of year. It's a dramatic time. There have been all these road detours because of construction and putting in new culverts. So the people are taking another path. And this car, a pickup truck, went in front of the Tollerood's house, and Marilyn was out weeding her garden as it went by. She'd never seen it before. She ignored it. It stopped. It was somebody she'd gone to high school with 15 years ago who recognized her, though she was bending over, and he got out. His name was Dwayne. He'd gone to dances with her, and suddenly his heart was inflamed with passion. Once more, he walked across the grass, not even daring to whisper her name. He touched her on the haunch, and she leaped forward, and she landed up to her jowls in petunias. She turned over. He said, "It's Dwayne. Do you remember me?" Well, she did, but not in that way. She remembered him in another way. But for him, it was all vivid. What happened between them when they were 17 in the front seat of a car, and it was late at night, and there was whispering and urging and the rustle of clothing and a blanket laid out in the grass. It was all right there for him, right there. And he remembered their song. She didn't remember that at all. My angel, come and live with me, and we'll bring you happiness through all eternity. She didn't remember that song whatsoever. He said, "Are you happy?" "Yes, of course," she said. "Of course I'm happy. What are you talking about? Are you really, truly happy?" "Yes, of course I'm happy," she said. "Honey," she said, I can't talk to you right now. I've got to go and fix supper." He was weeping, tears in his eyes. It had all come back to him the way it was that summer 15 years ago. He came back at midnight. Hours later, he found her again, found her house. She was sleeping upstairs with her husband, Darrell. Darrell had to wake her up and tell her, "Honey, there's a man in the front yard, and he's singing something to you. You better go down and find out what he's singing about." So she went down. He was drunk out of his mind. "Dwayne, Dwayne," he said, "don't you ever think of what would have happened? We could have been so happy together. I just wish we had taken that chance," he said. She said, "Dwayne, it was 15 years ago. You're drunk. Give me your car keys." She took them away from him. She made him promise that he would sleep it off in the front seat of his pickup truck. Get over it. But he couldn't get over it. He just couldn't. Finally, just to make him happy, she pulled her bathrobe up above her knees so that it was about the same height as your cheerleader skirt. And she did the cheer for him that he Remember, W-O-B-E-G-O-N. We did it once, we'll do it again. Leonard's, do or die, V-I-C-T-O-R-Y. And then she went back into the house. Her husband was asleep already. That's marriage for you. Her husband was asleep, and she got up in the morning. He was gone, and then the next day, you know, they'd finished the road repair project, and the detour was off, and he never came by their house again. It's that time of year, June, Midsummer Night. Midsummer Night's Eve, Shakespeare wrote, "The course of true love never did run smooth," and it certainly does not in June. It's the month when even sensible people can go crazy. Crazy love is the love of June. Calm, reasonable, good, wholesome people can just go out of their minds. Suddenly your life, which had been so peaceful, becomes an opera. And it had been sort of like a cartoon strip before. And now it's become an opera. And the soprano is singing and the tenor is all confused and bewildered, and there are knives and goblets, poison goblets, and wine, and people jumping out from behind curtains and people jumping off parapets and all this sort of thing in a small town like Lake Wobegon. This is quite an amazing thing. School comes to an end in June, and that's dramatic. Things suddenly coming to an end, leaving these hallowed halls, leaving your locker. It's been your locker all year, and you told it your secrets. Teachers have been looking forward to June all half of the year. It's how they got through February and March and April, was thinking about June, thinking about this crazy time of year, men going up north to Canada for drinking trips, and also involving loose talk and some fishing as well. And women going off on trips together, three women school teachers from Lake Wobegon flying to Los Angeles and renting an RV and driving, just making their way north through the state and through Yosemite and off to San Francisco with the agreement that no matter what happens on this trip, it will not be spoken of when we come home. Whatever happened, it will stay in the RV. It will not go back to Lake Wobegon. Freedom, the freedom of June and the RV leaving Los Angeles for teachers who've been working so hard all the year. The Patrick boy, Billy Patrick, felt that when he came to Los Angeles. He felt that freedom. Or he came here for that freedom, to get away from Lake Wobegon, and to get away from his feelings for Amy, with whom he was crazily, wildly in love. And then when she turned him down, he came to Los Angeles. He got an apartment out in Hawthorne. He got a job working for a man who was selling magnetic walnuts, which grow on trees near the Continental Divide, so they absorb magnetic energy from the earth, and this magnetic energy is able to keep the body's humors in balance, so to rid you of toxins and so forth. But you have to eat them ground up, including the shells, so you mix them up with fruit in a kind of a smoothie. But it tastes kind of grainy. It tastes like you're eating dirt, but it's good for you. And he worked for the magnetic walnut man and thought about Amy back home, his great love. They met in June when he got a Valentine, an unsigned Valentine, not in February, but in June. And it said, "I will meet you at my friend Barbara's." He had no idea who it was, but he knew that Barbara Ann Bunsen was having a party at her house on a Saturday night, and so he went there and sat apart from the others and waited. And this young, dark-haired beauty, this high hurdler, came and sat down beside him and looked at him. And he said, "Was that you?" And she said, yes, I've never done that before in my life, she said. Well, they talked for a while, and pretty soon they were talking about how they had never felt this way before in their lives. They had never felt this way about anyone before in their lives. All sorts of things for the first time. And before long, they were talking about marrying. And so they arranged a July wedding. Her parents wanted to have it outdoors, which in Minnesota in July is risky. But they got it all set up, and they spoke to Pastor Enqvist about it. She was awfully disappointed, Amy was, that he wouldn't allow their song to be played at the wedding. It wasn't a proper song. My angel, walk along with me, and I will bring you happiness through all eternity. Though it mentioned angels and eternity, it was not really a religious song. And so he made her have a song like, "Oh, love that will not let me go." But it was all set up. It was going to be beautiful, and the groomsmen were wearing white tuxedos, and the bridesmaids had special dresses they had made in just a few weeks, and it was all set, and the guests were there. It was at the baseball field, and there were hundreds of people sitting on folding chairs, and there was a stage and ferns and flowers, and the organ was set up, and the procession was all just about to start, and the sky turned black, and thunderclouds moved in, and lightning struck, and the power went out so the organ would not work at all, and rain poured down on people. They fled to their cars. They sat in their cars. The flowers just got drenched. And Billy and Amy were standing in the dugout. And he turned to her and he said, "Let's just get married." And she said, "You have no idea how hard my mother and I have worked to make this wedding special. You have no idea what we have." She threw her bouquet at him. It bounced off his chest, and she told him that she never wanted to see him ever again. A June romance, if there ever was one. So he went off to Los Angeles, just feeling bereft, just feeling as if he couldn't draw another breath. He came to work for the magnetic walnut guy, who then started selling lightning rods. And then he got the idea of selling lightning rods that you put into the ground in your garden, and it attracts lightning, and when the lightning strikes, it pushes nitrogen down into the soil, which promotes growth. And he was going on from there, but Billy moved back to Minnesota. He knew there was no hope for him, so he may as well die bereft and unhappy back where people know him better. He went back to Lake Wobegon to die, and he got a job at the pizza factory, frozen pizza. He was putting the mushrooms on the pizza day after day, slicing, chopping, putting the mushrooms on, just trying not to think about Amy, not to ask about Amy, not to ever. He heard that she had won a contest, a bus trip to San Francisco. He didn't want to know any more about it. He heard things. But she was still living in town, and she was working at the Mercantile on Main Street, but he wasn't sure. And then he was drinking with some friends at the Sidetrack Tap, and they were talking about robbing the VFW in St. Cloud one night and how easy this would be. They had been drinking a lot. He thought no more of it until a couple days later he read that his friends had been caught at the VFW. They had broken in after it closed, found no money in the till, and in disappointment they had mixed themselves gigantic drinks called Bombardiers, which are made from rum and whiskey and vodka and Kahlua, and served in enormous green goblets. And they had gotten three sheets to the wind, and then when they went to get out, they fell and they set off the alarm, and now they'd been arrested, and the newspaper had nicknamed them the Bomb Squad. They were looking at a couple of years in prison, and they were the butt of jokes in this community. He thought how close he had come to this, how close he had come to utter disgrace and degradation. He was walking down Main Street one sunny day, late in the summer, after Labor Day, and looking at the display of mattresses in the front window of the Mercantile and the sign that Cliff put up there, easy financing, everything down, no monthly payments. And and there she was standing beside him. He didn't look at her. She didn't look at him. She just said, "I always thought we should get a double bed." He said, "Not a king?" "No," she said. "I wouldn't want to have to look around for you. I'd want to have you right there." They went off and they talked. They had one date at the Midsummer Ballroom in Avon, Minnesota, where they danced the polka and they danced the slow waltz, that dance where you just kind of sidle around together. And they talked about how many children they would like to have and what sort of house they'd like and where they would live and where they would go on vacation. They said not a word about the past. They talked only of the future, and they went off and they got married a few days later. Pastor Enquist married them in his office at the church. He was wearing black t-shirt and jeans, same as they were wearing. They went to Duluth for their honeymoon. Came back. They said, "That's a September romance. That's a September romance. Winter's coming on. We need somebody nearby who also gives off heat, who oxidizes." But June, it's the crazy romance month. Something about pollen or something. It's something the hives are full of honey. The moon is called the honeymoon. In June, we resist this in Minnesota, in Lake Wobegon. We resist this craziness by heavy cream sauces, by putting melted cheese on things, by major desserts, by drinking weak coffee and pouring a lot of milk in it. But it can't be entirely resisted. Even sensible people do this. You want to warn them against it. You want to tell them, don't go there. Don't do that. That won't turn out well. And maybe you do warn them, but you know that they will do what they're going to do. So, if they're going to do it, go do it then. And remember what it was, so that when you are old and gray, you will have stories to tell about crazy love. When you are sitting under the old people's tree and we look at you and we think you are asleep because your eyes are closed. No, you're thinking back to that summer years ago when the two of you were on the outs and then the phone rang and she said, "I'm coming over. I'm coming over." And there was nothing you could do about it. And you knew what would happen when she did come over. And that's your story. Tell as much of that story as you want to tell. Well, that's the month that we're in. It'll soon be over. So just bide your time. Stay indoors. Stay away from the windows. Be careful. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.